we may devolve into the morning DJs.
Ah, yeah. I mean, that's already been happening.
It's kind of slowly been happening.
Hello.
Ooh, and welcome to the... they're
you
all
go
in,
or...
They're all in bold, so I'm not sure who's supposed to speak for who.
You go first.
I'm just screwing with you. Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. I was almost about to read this verbatim. I am Aaron Flores.
And I'm Brock Dittus. And...
Where are we broadcasting
from? Oh, we're broadcasting from Open Road Studios, the broadcasting studio, here in Portland, Oregon, in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Right you are, Aaron Flores. And occasionally we talk about bicycles, transit trains, simpler living. And today we have, what do we have?
We got Rob Sadowski here.
That's right.
In the studio, and he's going to remind us about his first time.
That's right. It reminds me of his first time. Yes. So, hello, Rob.
Hello.
How's it going?
I'm doing great.
It's good to see you again.
You guys are ready.
Oh, you know, we do our thing. Yeah, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's been too long. So it's good to see you.
It's
like
been
behind
like more
a
than a year, right?
And it's been at least 2 years, because I think the last time you were here, it was 2013.
Oh, okay.
I think. And you weren't even here. You were.
It was just right
location.
After Michael Tetta started at the Community Cycling Center.
That's right, and he was there all as well, right?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about equity, and someone's moving my big stick in front of me.
Well, wouldn't be the first time. Microphone adjustments are necessary occasionally. You know what it probably needs is one more twist on that other knob.
Yeah.
Yeah. As it were.
Now they're twisting.
Oh no, the longer one.
You know what? We didn't.
No, I mean the one on the other side.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Oh, that one. Yeah, I think I might have broken that screw. I feel badly about that.
Ah.
But you know, such is life.
Yeah, so that's not going to tighten. Remember that thing that.
Remember back when we had microphone stands that worked. So this is all, I mean, I guess this all stays in, right? We're just kind of adjusting things as it goes.
You know, the fans like it, right? Yeah,
I think so. This is fan service. Seriously. Oh, so, well, why don't I start by telling you guys what I did over the weekend? Because I boarded a red eye flight. I'll say that again to pronounce it correctly. Red eye flight. Friday night at like 10:30, 11, something like that. And flew to Chicago and then to Philadelphia. And you're from Chicago.
I spent a long time in Chicago.
Yeah. They have a nice airport. That's the only part of it I saw this time.
It's a big airport, too.
It is, yeah. And, you know, there are places to get hot dogs just about everywhere, which I appreciate. So
were they specifically Chicago-style dogs?
I believe so.
You can get a Chicago-style dog. It's not the greatest of Chicago-style dogs, but for those of us who sometimes only go to Chicago now through the airport, it can get you enough of a Chicago dog fix.
There you go. Yeah, especially if you haven't had one for a while, I'm sure. It's like,
yeah.
Hey, I'll get the airport version.
Although you can at Michael's here on Sandy.
Oh, yeah.
Near Ankeny, you can get your Chicago dog fix as well as your Chicago beef fix.
Really? They've got that at Michael's? I remember driving past that. I was actually right there tonight on, is it Sandy Boulevard, right near Burnside?
Sandy.
I can't turn left. It was. It's been there for a while. That's a good place to get a hot dog.
Yeah. Chicago style, too.
Really?
That's right.
And so I was going to say, let's clarify what a Chicago-style dog is.
So first you got to start with the dog itself. It's a Vienna beef, all-beef patty, all-beef dog, not a patty, but an all-beef hot dog. It's kind of, you know, say this big around
about a quarter size.
Yeah. And then you want a sesame seed bun. And then on top of that, you if you get a Chicago dog, a Chicago style, you get ketchup, relish, chopped onion, a spear of pickle.
A spear.
Spear.
That was the kicker.
Half slices of tomato, celery, salt, and then if you want hot peppers, you would get these hot like serrano style peppers that are slightly pickled.
Okay.
Wow. You would not get ketchup. And if you ordered ketchup in Chicago, they would be like, what? No, it's mustard. Like,
get out of town. Yeah.
And so you can get things off of that. I don't like relish. I'm not a sweet mm-hmm. relish person, so I usually order my hot dog everything, but no relish.
Wait, so they have the relish and they have the full spear?
Correct.
Wow, that's a lot of pickle.
Yeah, it's a lot of pickle, but it's a different, you know, it's a different flavor. Like, yeah. So if you like that sweet relish, you've got both that dill and that sweet.
Mm. And the serrano peppers are slightly pickled themselves?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, nice.
And they're good, and they're hot.
And it's not
Gardeniera. Nope, not no peppercino, no Gardeniera.
So what if you were to take the tube of meat and replace it with those hot mamas, which have also been pickled, that you can buy like at the convenience store or whatever?
It wouldn't work there. Nope.
It would not
No.
work.
I remember in college, I went to college at the University of Michigan, and in Ann Arbor, there was a place that had a Chicago-style hot dog place, and they would replace the hot dog for people with a tofu rectangle.
Oh.
Remarkably good, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Corners.
I was wondering how that would work out for those who don't eat.
Well, now you have tofu pups and other things that you can replace that with.
Now they actually have round hot dogs that are not made of meat, which
right.
It's a relatively
new. It was arguable whether or not it was to begin with.
Yeah, right. I know. So that's I don't know if we've talked about meatless products that look like the product that they were. My general feeling is as when I do eat vegetarian, I don't need my vegetables to look like meat.
Yeah.
I actually find it disconcerting when you're eating something that looks like a meat product.
Yeah,
at that point,
okay.
Why don't you just eat the
why
meat product?
Why don't you just eat the...
Huh. It depends upon why you're doing it, but there's so many sustainable ways to eat meat now that... Anyway.
Yeah, there's so many more sustainable ways to eat vegetables, I suppose, right?
Yeah, there are too. Yeah, right. How much process do you need?
Yeah.
I mean, tofu's already processed to begin with, and then mm-hmm. to put it in a thing that looks like a casing, and then you're coloring it to look like the hot dog.
Right.
And adding smoke.
I will say that I do enjoy fake meat. Like when I get a good fake meat that like is tasty, I do enjoy that experience.
That really does remind me of my first time.
Wait, it was fake meat?
No, I'm just talking about sausage with you
guys.
Oh,
okay. All right. by the way.
Yeah, let's crack these open.
It is still sober September for me, so I'm drinking another Steelhead root beer because it's really good, the pure vanilla and honey. And you have the Fenneman's Rose Lemonade.
Fenneman's Rose Lemonade. Oh.
So good. No?
Is it cloyingly sweet?
It's... I like their lemonade. I forgot I didn't like the rose lemonade.
But it's the Rose City.
It's oh yeah, never mind. It's cool.
Okay,
Rose
sweet.
City till I die, folks.
And then you, Rob, have what?
I have the Line Dry Rye IPA from Oakshire. It's a Rye Indian Pale Ale.
And we're trying to figure out why they call it Line Dry. We don't know.
If you're out there and you know, let us know.
Yes, I'm looking forward to trying that one when September is over. So
okay, I'll try to leave you some.
Actually, just like a quarter inch to the bottom.
Yeah,
we'll just let it sit open in the studio for like about 2 weeks. And then we'll be good. Oh, so we got all these beverages from the Beer Mongers. We were just over there. I said hi to Andrew.
Yeah.
Who got back from Burning Man,
yeah.
He said it was an amazing experience, which blew me away because, I don't know, because I guess I'm jaded and cynical and I have the wrong impressions about Burning Man.
And that's what you told him.
Right.
There. Like, he told us what he did and what he liked about Burning Man, and it was definitely... beyond what we were expecting.
Yeah.
Do you know how to tell when someone's gone to Burning Man?
No.
Don't worry, they'll tell you.
They'll tell you.
That is a thing.
It's like vegans.
Right. How do you tell? Exactly. Oh, you'd know by now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it just seems both an amazing and incredible dusty experience.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, and I would imagine there's parallels. Yeah. The parallels to the vegan is that, like, you know, some people are having a great experience and it's a good thing for them to do. And other people, you'd be like, just stop being vegan. Stop.
One of the things about Burning Man that I find really interesting is that people love it because it's supposedly this carbon neutral experience. And it really isn't. I mean, there's just no... First
How
of all, it's
possible?
Really impossible to have an
How
event carbon neutral. Yeah. But then... They're not counting any of the products people are bringing with them. They're driving. They're
or
flying.
Or how to get there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Also, may I add, there's an enormous statue of a man that burns up.
Adding carbon.
Well, that is a carbon thing.
That is carbon, yeah.
So that's just a thing. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it or shouldn't go if that's your thing, but...
Let's not have any illusions here.
it takes some things to put this all together.
Yeah.
But apparently very well organized is what Andrew said. So, yeah.
Right, and it can showcase that you don't... that self-government can work.
Right,
that's
right.
And he felt very safe. That was one of the things he said.
Yeah. Oh, and that's good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Because, yeah, that
which
was
is, again, not what I was thinking.
Right, because I heard don't ever take anything you love to Burning Man, whether it's your vehicle or your girlfriend or whatever. But, yeah. Speaking of organization, you know it was not well organized?
What was that?
Me renting a car from the Philadelphia airport.
Oh, no.
And trying to get to Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. You know, another
thing. I've been to Lincoln. My sister lives kind of in between those two.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
In Bird in Hand?
She lives in Titusville, New Jersey.
Titusville. I don't know that one.
So it's right across the right where Washington crossed the Delaware.
Oh, okay.
Literally, like.
Like when he stood up in
three houses down, there's a little thing that said he did it there.
Do you think he actually stood up in the boat?
No.
I feel like that's probably like posturing by the artist, kind of retroactively.
I think he was
like
on his knees. Kind of like paddleboarding.
I think they were all like really like, you know, just hunched low. Hope they don't see us.
Right.
They're like,
right.
Dude, sit down, dude.
Except for, yeah, George Washington's like, oh, they're not going to shoot me.
They can't shoot that far.
Yeah.
Have you tried shooting a musket?
I'm bulletproof. Yeah. So I had two choices going to, it was Adele's cousin's wedding in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And every time I've been there before, we've taken the Amtrak from Philadelphia Airport because it's easy. Mm-hmm. And this time around, I was like, you know what? It would cost $10 more to rent a car, and then I would have the flexibility of schedule to do kind of whatever I wanted to, which is not entirely true. Number one, because the price quoted on the deal site that I was looking at does not include how much you have to pay for insurance or, like, you know, coverage for the vehicle. Doesn't count the fuel that you have to put back into it. And I overestimated my ability to not get lost in Delaware.
Oh.
So I'm trying to drive to Lancaster. And it turns out, instead, I'm driving south because the one step that I missed in the instructions was to find this one highway. And so then all of a sudden, boom, Delaware.
Oh,
so,
shit.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know.
Well, now you've seen Delaware.
Right, right. And I parked in a KFC / Taco Bell parking lot and poached their Wi-Fi.
Nice.
Because I have no data plan. So I was looking for directions using the Wi-Fi. And then I found
Did you get your fourth meal?
I did not. I should have. I did not patronize the establishment at all. And yet. Yeah.
Do you feel bad about this?
No.
Yeah.
No. I feel bad about going against the traffic pattern unwittingly, I think. Like, I was driving one way and all these people were driving the other. And it's the East Coast, so they're all, like, you know, a little bit tense
really
anyways.
Uptight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was tense because, you know, I don't know where I am and I don't know where I'm going. And I'm piloting this enormous vehicle. I had rented, basically, it was supposed to be a compact.
Uh-huh.
And they were all out of compacts. And
oh,
they were all
happens.
Out of, like sedans.
This is guaranteed.
And so I ended up with this, a Sienna Toyota? Like, the really big, like, 8-person minivan.
What?
With, like, the jump seat and everything. Which worked out well in the end because Adele has a lot of siblings and I drove most of them to the wedding.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was packed full, 8 of us. But, yeah. So, anyways, that happened. And I think I brought the rain to Pennsylvania because it had been warm before. And then it rained the day of, you know, my cousin-in-law's wedding? Does that go that
Whatever.
Far? Can I call it that?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, you just did, so no.
Rob
says no.
All right. The official designation does not extend that far. And yet, I feel like I was a part of their family. So,
excellent.
Yeah. I did hang out with all the other, like, plus ones we called ourselves. Because it was like, you know, my sister's husband. And my sister's other sister's boyfriend, and like all of us extra guys that just kind of hang around.
Were there any good, like, embarrassing moments that happened during that wedding? I love hearing those kind of stories.
Like, you know,
like the drunk, like
drunk
in-law
uncle,
or
yeah,
drunk uncle is like,
or you know, the some malfunction somewhere along the way.
Yeah,
what
the,
happened?
The jealous sister or brother or whatever.
Yeah. There was none of those. The family was quite civil, good people, but. It did rain, and so it was like plan B was scrapped because there was a plan A, and then it had to be scrapped because of the rain, and then plan B was also scrapped because of rain because there was all this water on the ground. It was an outdoor wedding.
Oh.
It was at their farm, just kind of on their house, at their house. It's a fancy farm. But plan C was like a wedding in the round, so you got all these people coming in, and everybody sat down in like this big circle, and everybody's looking at each other. And so Adele and I happened to be sitting in like the front row of the back round or whatever, like – So everybody's standing, I guess.
Behind the altar,
kind
so
of,
to speak?
Yeah. So I guess we all kind of comprised the altar or
okay.
something like that. Like half the crowd was behind the wedding party. So I happened to be in the row in which all the bridesmaids walk in and then turn their backs to us and stand right in front of us. So, like, you know, the family is seated on the other side of the room or a tent or whatever. And so they're all, like, you know, they can kind of see what's happening and whatnot. They can see the actual, you know, wedding party coming and everything. I'm just staring at, like, the backsides of women. And I feel kind of, like, self-conscious and awkward about this because I'm like, I just don't want you. I don't know a lot of these people. It should be very obvious that I'm looking somewhere else. So I spent a lot of time kind of looking up, like, sideways to the left up at the roof of the tent.
Which makes it even more obvious.
Right, right. And so then the point gets to where, like, the bride is going to walk in. Everybody stands up, right? But the front row, because all the bridesmaids are, like, standing right in front of us, if we stand up, we're going to, like, push them forward. And so all the other people in the – everybody else is kind of, like, smaller. I'm a large man. And so, like, I end up having to push my chair back into the aisle of the row behind us. There's nobody right behind me, but there's another guy that I kind of get into his personal space. And I push the chair backwards. And then I'm standing up. And then, like, you know, when I sit down, I just kind of stayed there.
So you're, like, back behind
your row. I'm basically sitting in the aisle. Yeah. But anyway, so that worked out. But nobody fell over. There was a lot of, you know, there was a guy whose chair was sinking into the mud.
Oh, really?
I think at one point during the reception, but you know, it didn't work. Didn't go poorly. So, anyways.
So no dysfunction.
No dysfunction.
No dysfunction.
No. And I was able to get a picture of myself next to an Amish buggy crossing sign.
Oh yeah.
Which I was really excited about. Which I hashtagged share the road.
But to be clear, this was not an Amish wedding.
No, this was not. They're not. I'm sure they have some sort of, you know, their parents were probably farmers back in the day.
Sure.
And parents and grandparents before them and whatnot. But I don't know if they were actually Amish or not.
What did they farm?
That's a good question. Chickens right now. And before that, back in the day, I forget. I think, well, Adele's grandma, like, harvested tobacco back in the day because she was Mennonite or something like that. Some other, like, simple folk from that region.
And that's what you do when you're Mennonite?
Yeah. Tobacco's a big crop.
You farm what you can farm.
I guess. I did see a barn with a bunch of tobacco leaves hanging in it.
Really?
So, yeah.
Was it all you could do not to raid it?
I was very tempted to run and just, like, grab all the leaves.
Yeah.
I got them all. I'm going to roll my own. So, yeah.
I learned recently that cigarette filters don't do anything.
Yeah. But they make you feel better.
About what?
I don't know. About yourself.
Yeah.
Your habits.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm speaking from experience.
They don't filter anything out.
Right.
Really?
No. In fact, they can add worse stuff in.
Because you're inhaling, like through the fiberglass or whatever.
Yeah.
And styrofoam.
Yeah. I mean, it's not good to smoke, but
right. You might as well just go filterless.
But if you're going to do it, come on. Quit being a wuss about it.
Yeah.
You need one of those long, long filter holders.
Like Cruella de Vil style?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. They would make you look classy, I think.
Yeah.
So that all happened.
Is that what would do it? I'll just get one of those and I'll look classy.
I think, yeah,
like
exactly.
Like a Bond villain.
Right. you, Aaron, went to the opening of the bridge.
Yes, I did. That was...
It's brand new bridge, the orange bridge.
Tillicum Bridge.
Tillicum, that's right.
By foot or by bike?
I went by bike.
How was the little bump?
The little bump.
When you're traveling west on the bridge and you're going downhill, when they design there's a gap that's intentionally there because of expansion and contraction. But it expanded and contracted more than they thought they would, so they had to make some change. But that left a huge gap for bicycles, and they put a little plastic bump over it.
Okay,
I believe it's still gray, the same color as the cement, and it doesn't give you much of a warning.
Nope.
So I'm a little worried about that.
No, it just hits.
Yeah.
You're right.
And
yeah, I remember that.
I've told them that if they don't fix that, I'm going to paint it. So I'm asking because I want to know if I need to go out with a can of paint this weekend.
That worked out for one guy on Barber, right?
Did that work out?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's all over this country. There are great vigilante folks who are going around and spray painting either yellow or orange markings where there's hazards, and you know, thank them. That's great. But, you know,
sometimes a penis.
Really?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your service to the community, the country.
So sometimes people will spray paint a penis on
hazards
on like what is those potholes?
Oh yeah,
because people are more offended by the vulgarity of it,
and they'll get results quicker.
Yes.
So know your strategies and do what needs to be done.
Yes.
So okay, if you're out there and you want to paint you know, a warning sign of any kind.
Turn on the soundboard, man. Turn on the soundboard.
All right.
Say it again.
If you're out there and you want to paint anything, penises or other warning signs, it's great. It's a real part of our advocacy movement. Thank you.
Yeah, this, of course, is not sponsored by either the Sprocket Podcast or Rob's Parent Association. So, yes, it's just three guys saying things.
Yep. Just three dudes.
That's all for legal reasons. And we're having a good time.
It's for entertainment purposes only.
But it's a biting social commentary as well.
So, not last weekend, but the weekend before, I went for this bike ride out at this guy, Trio Tours, out in Heppner, Oregon.
I've heard about this. Oh, yeah. Trio, that's the farm out there, like way out in eastern Oregon.
It's way out in eastern Oregon, and it's a farm. And basically what he does is he rents a lodge out to hunters. He trains pheasants and chuckers how to fly, lets them loose, and then people kill them.
Okay.
And that's
sporting.
It's sporting. And they have to, he teaches them to fly because normally they would fly up, and it's hard to shoot when they're flying up.
Sure.
It's a lot easier when they're sideways on an angle. So he teaches them how to fly so they're easier.
So,
they can kill
these so first you fuck with their flight path, then you shoot them.
And he's got pictures in the lodge of like these two or three people like with their guns and their camouflage. And then all the dead birds in front of them, and then how many were released and how many they got. So like 472 released, 420 killed.
Oh, my God.
So half.
No, close to like 80-90%, yeah, they're grabbing them.
Oh, wow.
But what's interesting and what relates to this podcast is he's beginning to think about how to close the loop. So imagine you're this hunter and you bagged 400 birds, or maybe you're one of three, so 120 birds.
Okay, yeah.
Are you going to bring 120 birds home to Estelle?
Adele?
I mean, what is she going to say, right?
Possibly. Right, I said, hey, you're going to clean all these, she'd be probably no.
No, right? Yeah. So what he does is he basically takes these birds off the hands of the hunters, processes them, and cooks them into pheasant pot pie.
Really?
And now he's going to be an anchor tenant in this new incubator in Condon, and he's planning on selling high-priced pheasant pot pies to New Seasons and Whole Foods.
Okay. So these guys, because they don't want to bring the birds home anyways, right?
No, they don't
want to pluck
maybe
them.
Maybe a few.
They don't want to skin them. Their wives don't want to do that as well.
You just want like the tail feathers or something.
You can take those.
But the thing is like it's not even a sport. I mean, it's like
no.
Right? There's not even a ball.
It's like go play a video game. It's harder than that. It's just
go whack a hockey puck. Yeah.
But so during the off season, he's trying to set up this bike tourism. And it seems like it's in the middle of nowhere. It's in the middle of ranch land, mostly wheat farming and a little bit of cattle.
Yeah.
But 3,000 feet up high. First day, we rode from Wasco, Oregon, all the way kind of uphill, climbed 3,000 feet. And then day two, we went from Hardman down into up the Umatilla Forest and then down into John Day National Monument.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You're biking in some of the most beautiful parts of Oregon. He picks you up. He treats you. He's got this great system, beds to sleep in, unlike like a cycle Oregon where you're sleeping in tents with thousands of other people's and real bathrooms and showers, and then great food.
Oh. Pot pies?
Included. Yeah, we had a pheasant pot pie that was really good.
Nice.
And I ate chucker for the first time.
What is a chucker?
Is a little like a partridge or a quail.
Oh, it's C-H-U-K-A-R?
Yes.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And it tastes just like white meat chicken. It was not very impressive. Where pheasant had a real flavor, like a distinct flavor that was
gamier.
Good. It wasn't, these weren't gamey because he raises them and all they do is learn how to fly.
Right.
On a 30, 40 degree angle. They're not
probably
really
eating corn or
probably
something like
fatten
that.
Fatten them up on the farm.
If they were commercial airline pilots, they'd probably do great.
Yes.
That's like about the angle you want, right?
Right.
More or less. But
yeah.
But if you're trying to be a pheasant, not especially effective.
And then in the lodge, he's got these pictures on the wall, and about 2/3 of the pictures are these hunters and their birds and, you know, the data. And then the rest are these bicyclists. And it's just a really interesting kind of juxtaposition of these two.
Is there any flow between the two? Like, are there some people that are both hunters and bicyclists that go for both?
I don't. Well, so one of the things that Phil Carlson, who's the who runs the Trio Tours, says that when he runs these hunting trips and experiences, everyone eats at the same table. So it's like about 12 people that can sit at a table. And he asks, he starts conversations up and he really gets people talking. And he often will hear people like, what are these bicyclists doing on the wall? And he said,
I hate those motherfuckers.
He says every single time he'll say, okay, who here rides a bicycle on a regular basis? And at least one hunter every time raises their hand.
Okay.
And it just shuts people up.
It's boring.
Because they just want to make fun of someone, but then they're like realizing, oh, this is that person.
I guess we have to make fun of Bob over here.
And then he starts telling the story about, you know, people who come and why they bike, what they're doing, and how they're bringing money into the community.
Into Heppner, yeah.
And, and for us, it's like I never experienced that part of Oregon and experience it without a car. I could experience it with no barrier between my eyeballs and what I was seeing.
Yeah.
It was great.
Did you take his sweet bus ride then too?
Yeah. So he picked us up in Portland.
Right. Cause he has a bus. Then he just goes out and gets people that want to do this bicycling experience.
And he doesn't call it a sag wagon. If you're like done biking for the day, you get in the happy hour wagon and he hands you a beer or whatever you want. And
but it's not sag as in like, I don't want to do this part.
No. And it's just great. And my wife and I went and we went with some other friends and, it was just really neat. And here's this guy who's just trying to figure it out. He's just like, you know, he's not a bicyclist at all.
But he likes bicycles.
And he was a farmer. He's part of this farming family, just trying to figure out how to make another buck.
Yeah.
And he's doing it in a way that's really cool.
Good for him.
Hopefully it'll keep going. But
that's cool. Yeah. I remember reading Jonathan's on Bike Portland coverage of his experience out there a couple of years ago. And you've been doing it. And I feel like, did Pathless Pedal get out there? I feel like they might have.
Yeah, Russin, they went, I think, that first year. And one of the things that he's been doing is just asking a few people to come out at no cost to them to talk about it.
Hey, Aaron, what are you doing next year?
Yeah.
So I learned something really important when booking a tour like this, to ask friends to go with you who ride at your same pace.
Ah.
Because the four people that we invited were so much faster than us.
Oh, yeah.
And they just
left you behind.
Flew out there. But Phil has this guy who he hires who rides sweep.
Okay.
So it was pretty windy at times, and he would just basically ride in front of us. So he was the, what are the Tour de France folks called? The ones that.
Like a pacer?
Well, no. It's
not Peloton.
No, but it's, I'll remember the term, but it's.
Sports.
It's basically your maid who rides in front of you to keep the wind away from you. And we had one of those, and it was really kind of nice. And if we just talk us through, it's okay. It's only this far. Or, yeah, there's going to be another hill, but it's not too bad.
Kind of like a hunter would have a guide. If you're hunting for adventure on a bicycle at Trio Tours.
Exactly.
You have a guide.
Well, I guess other folks have had the experience where he's brought the guns out and let people shoot in the shooting range, but they weren't ready for us to do that. I really wanted that.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I've never shot a gun
in my
life. And
the pheasant weren't.
Never ever?
Yet.
Never even held a gun. My parents were really like, no guns.
Right.
I couldn't have water pistols in my house.
Yeah. Really. And neither could I.
I couldn't put Legos into the shape of a gun.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
Could you go pew pew?
No, I think they would yell at me for that, too.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Aaron, have you ever shot a gun?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was a Boy Scout.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you got a badge for it?
The American way.
Do you get one badge for holding one for shooting another Boy Scout?
Totally.
I never got a single merit badge. I don't even know. Honestly, looking back, I don't even know what the hell I was doing in Boy Scouts other than, like, my other brothers were in it.
My oldest brother was Eagle Scout. And so he's the oldest of the four.
Yeah.
So there's no way any of us could ever surpass that.
Right.
And I made it into Weeblos, but not past that. By that time, it was like nothing. It was like you're sitting around and your parents are making soapbox derby cars. You're not doing anything at this point.
Yeah.
It was just nothing. I never camped. I was in Cub Scouts and Weeblos, so we never went camping.
Did you hibernate?
It never happened for me until I joined the Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
And then we camped. That was maybe the only enjoyable part of it.
Not the uniform?
No.
I always wanted to wear the uniform. I was actually, I got into, what was it, the Bible Memory Club that wanted to be the Boy Scouts. That was at my local church.
Bible.
And it had like kind of a similar looking scarf, but some distinct differences to avoid copyright infringement,
really?
I'm sure. Yeah, I don't know. But I got badges for like, you know, keeping words in my head. So, yeah. I'm proud of my
badges.
Retention abilities. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're Catholic? What was the...
Evangelical.
Evangelical.
Yeah. Yeah. Awana Clubs, I believe is
Awana.
What it was called.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah. But, yeah, it's... being a part of something, wearing a uniform, wearing a scarf, having a bolo tie, or whatever it is that you do.
Oh. Or a little, like, ascot, the little full.
Right, exactly. Yeah. There's something to that. So, feeling like you belong. Which I feel like it's probably why, I don't know, it's why Lycra is kind of popular in certain circles is because like you feel like you have like a sense of belonging or like, hey, I am a part of these people. I get recognized as them when I go out there.
Bicycling used to be that way.
Yeah, not so much anymore.
No, now it's the now it's no longer a thing. Like the membership in the club, you don't need to like be in the club in order to feel okay. You're not odd, particularly in Portland where people are, you know, everyone bikes. It's very different.
I was going to ask, do you think it's different like depending on where you are? Because I feel like there are some places where like the Lycra thing is still definitely that like you're kind of out of that club.
Well, yeah. Whether it's Lycra or whether it's, you know, the leather jackets because you're building Frankenbikes. And
right.
You can still find those sections even in Portland, but certainly in other cities where, you know, like if you're in a place like Houston
right.
or Rio or something where you just feel kind of out of place, then you're going to – then you gather.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have those gatherings here, whether it's part of Petapalooza and stuff, but it's just not the same as it was 20 years ago. So it's a whole new world that we're, as advocates, are thinking about and how to adapt to and how to organize.
I wonder if Clackamas has more of that. It's like, because it's like the whole Portland creep thing, like trying to keep like the people, like the leather jacket crowds and the like tight pants crowds and all the.
It's a great idea. We should get like the freak bikes.
The Clackamas Cycle Club.
Clackamas freak bikes.
I heard that someone who lived down in North Clackamas County was
worried. Isn't
that worried,
Portland? No. Exactly. Milwaukee, I meant.
Yes, it's a la bike snob. It would be North Clackamas County's like top hat or whatever.
Well, North Clackamas
I like
School
the,
Board.
Yeah.
Got engaged with us. They're supporting our For Every Kid campaign to get safe routes to school in
every
metropolitan area.
Oh,
so it's a little bit of a they're a little bit of an oddball in Clackamas.
Yeah, yeah. They want Portland creep for the young, for the youth.
Well, what they want is urban communities that have appropriate density where you can like easily walk to and from places within 20 minutes.
Oh, okay.
They want that economy, and then they're real. They're not. They know that it's not about the culture. It's about this whole economy.
Right. What they don't want is cheap beer and ping pong.
No one wants that.
Have you been to Pips and Bounce yet?
No. Where is this?
So Pips and Bounce is in the same building as the Grand Central Bowling.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
And it's a ping pong bar, and it's a lot of fun. But they don't have cheap beer. But it's they have good beer and ping pong, and it's amazing how fun you can have in a place like that.
Right, right.
The time I went there, it was super crowded.
Yeah.
And half of the place was rented out for a private party.
So our office went as like just like a reward after a staff meeting, and we took the crew out. And we got two tables, and we could just kind of go in and out. And there were people who had never played ping pong, and there were people who had. And what was interesting was to see the competitiveness of people arise when in the office environment you don't necessarily see. Like
sure.
You can see like slamming down people's throats and like, oh, where has that been?
Exactly. As opposed to the guy who's already like, you know, suck on this spreadsheet or whatever.
Yeah, we don't have that in
Okay. It doesn't happen.
I'm just trying to imagine either our bookkeeper or our operations director saying suck on the spreadsheet.
I was
advocate
thinking,
this, damn it.
Exactly. Yeah. I was thinking about how, like, back in the day, I used to think that, like, all the bicyclists in Portland knew each other. It was, like, I don't know, 2006 or something. I was just starting to get into bikes myself. And I was like, oh, all these people.
It's all just one club.
Right. It was, like, basically everybody who went to Zoo Bomb or something. I was like, oh, all these people know each other. And, like, I mean, I don't think that was probably the case then, but it's what it seemed like. Uh-huh. But now Portland is enough of a place where different kinds of people live and enough different kinds of people are bicycling that you can't know all the bicyclists in Portland. Like, it's not physically possible.
No.
And it's probably even impossible to get that perception now. And I like that because that means that there's enough people doing it that it's like a cultural force.
Sure.
Well, and it's become a transportation option. It's not like an alternative. It's not like this thing that some people do. People are looking at it, how am I going to get to work or how am I going to get to blank per day? And bike's one of those options.
Right, right.
And people don't look at you like, you biked? Like you don't go like even to a party, people don't look at you and go, you biked here in your dress clothes? It's just such a regular part of what we are.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. Part of me, I mean, I like kind of the oddity of bicycling. I like sort of that.
So you're going to move to Houston.
That kind of, apparently. I like the counterculture-ness of it, but I find the fact that it's normal here. I find that very, it makes me sit a little bit more at ease, I guess, in that, I feel safer and two, like you don't feel as much of an oddity. You don't feel like you're sticking out quite as much. And And then it's just, you know, you don't like have a tribe per se.
Right.
You know, you're just with the gang or with your friends. You know, you're not with the leather jacket crowd or the Lycra crowd or whatever.
What if it's a tribe called Quest?
That's a whole different thing altogether.
Okay. All right.
But remember, you have to say the whole thing.
It's true.
It's true. The handshake, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone gave me one of those handshakes the other day. I don't know if you ever. I think men only experience this, where you shake someone's hand and all of a sudden there's some extra finger on your wrist.
Like extra. Yeah. It's just
like, you know, it's like the Masons or frat boy or something like that.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do because it's like.
You're not a Mason.
I know I'm not with you. I know I'm not with you.
You yell Skull and Bones really loud.
Skull and Bones!
Exactly.
I don't think they have a handshake.
Attention. I think they know.
Or say like something in Latin. Yeah.
Oris menus plupless.
Right. I have that thing where like... depending on like how things go. Because like, I like the secret handshake or like the extra handshake or whatever. And so I often go for it, but I don't think I know what I'm doing when I go for it. I'm just like, I move the hand around, but it doesn't like leave the other person's hand area. And so it's like, nobody really knows kind of what's happening.
You got like this hovering handshake that doesn't end.
And then I end up with the finger pistols at the end.
Right. So you're kind of appropriating someone's culture, but you don't know what you're doing enough to get there.
Exactly. Yeah.
I just grab the whole hand, like just crumple it up into a fist.
Right.
Okay.
I'm the dominant one. Something like that.
Someone tried to shake my hand the other day, and I had just eaten a handful of grapes. My hand was like so sticky. And no, it's hard to tell someone you don't want to shake their hands, but I didn't want to. It was still wet sticky, too.
Sorry. I was making wine. What can I say?
So nothing personal. You just don't want to shake
hand. I promise you.
Right.
You don't want to shake this hand.
Well, then there's like if you're a huggy person at all, you know, and if it's appropriate to hug someone in a certain context, then there's like all of that. And
whether you gotta ask, you have to ask.
Do you have to?
I mean, for the most part now, if you don't know, are you a hugger? Do you like hugs? Is it okay? Can I hug you?
That's because you're self-aware. I mean, there's people out there that just want to go in and give you the hug.
I think sometimes that's me, depending on the situation. Like I think I get a good read on people on whether or not they're like hug receptive, and whether or not it'll like work in the room.
Sure.
So that's sometimes I'm because I don't like being touched, and I don't like really touching people other than hugs. I think like just a good quick 2 second hug. That's like the
We have a couple interesting folks in our office. One who Lauren Huggle. She was actually born Hugel, but she wanted to rename as Huggle because she really loves hugs.
Yeah.
And then a Leanne in our office who really likes to hug, but she's really bony. So it's one of those things where it's like, I want to hug you, but I know it's going to hurt.
Just watch out for the angles.
Yeah. It's hard though, because you don't want to like make them feel bad.
Right. And you don't want to get hurt.
And she's so good at it. I mean, except for the boniness and she's
is she going to hear this?
I hope so. I think she knows how I feel about her hugs.
Okay, there we go.
I think it's worth the pain. I really do. If you're out there, if you've never hugged Leanne, just know it is worth the pain.
You know, sometimes love hurts.
Yes, exactly.
But it's okay. Yeah.
It's the emotion and the energy and the happiness and the smile that all make that pain worth it.
Right.
Oh. Has there been a podcast about hugs yet?
I don't think so. I think this is the one.
The hugging pod, the hugging episode.
Chuckers, Pheasants, and Hugs.
Okay, that's what we're calling this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, is there anything else you want to talk about that's happening right now? You personally, or
have we talked about anything
about?
Yet?
So much
at
going
all?
On. I mean, you know, so Bike Share is coming to Portland.
Bike Share.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of Bike Share is coming to Portland?
So the Social Bike Model, which is a company that has Sobi bikes, it's kind of like the car to go of Bike Share. Rather than have the system locked in, you can leave the bikes anywhere.
You said Sobi bikes?
Sobi.
Like that carrot orange drink?
Yes.
Yeah.
Same company or
No, it's Social Bikes, and then that's their brand.
Okay.
But the idea is that the whole locking system comes with the bike.
Yeah.
There's incentives to return it within a location. If you don't return it with the location like Car2Go, it's not considered returned.
It's
really neat because
somewhere.
You can just kind of put it everywhere and you don't have to have that round trip stations as much.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's not as reliable. Like you're not going to like, oh, that's the station. I can expect it. But you get your app, you're going to have it. And by spring of 2016, will be one of the next cities, but we're, you know, considering where Portland is, it's a little embarrassing how long it's taken, but we'll have right. 600 bikes out on the system.
So this is the bike share that everybody's been waiting for. This
absolutely.
Is the,
yeah. So when I came here in 2010, started advocating for bike share right away. There were people in the city. There were people who ran bike share that were like, oh, you don't need to do it in Portland. And I was like, no, we need it in Portland. You can really see the cities that have them. The boost in mode share has been enormous.
Tim Mooney in D.C. has made many claims that it's D.C.'s bike share that has increased their ridership and their infrastructure so much in the past couple of years.
It reinforces the need for infrastructure. It gets more people who might not have experienced it. And it's so important to D.C. because you've got aides and who are working for Congress that are writing it.
Yeah.
And so when they're a lunatic fringe Republican, I'm not saying that as a BTA person because I have to be nonpartisan.
This is Rob Sadowski, unaffiliated with any sort of advocacy organization at this point.
But these folks who are controlling the world say, like, we hate bikes. And their assistants are like, that's how I got to work today.
Right, dude.
You know, it helps kind of minimize a little bit of that, our hope.
Sure. Right.
It's going to be great. And one of the other things I'm excited by it is that there's a real commitment to what they call high road standards, decent wages and training, and particularly focused on getting these are new jobs, never before in Portland, getting those jobs into the hands of underserved communities, but particularly communities of color in Portland that have some of the highest unemployment rates.
Right. So the maintenance of this fleet and kind of taking care of it and all that. Yeah.
New jobs.
Where people need jobs.
Yeah. And so it's not going to go to people who don't, you know, really don't need the job, but people who do need the job and the training.
Cool.
So we're real excited by that. So that's coming. Other things that are new, Vision Zero, commitment to Vision Zero in the city of Portland and moving that forward. We're working with a group of families that have been victims of crashes, either themselves have gotten hurt or one of their family members died, to organize a self-organized model similar to Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Yeah.
So when that voice about reason and that voice for fighting, whether it's legislation or policy change or asking for new infrastructure, that voice is coming from people who have really been impacted in a different way. And right. It's really hard for legislators to, like, not listen.
Totally. Right. It's like real stories from real life.
It's made a big difference in New York, and we're organizing one here. We're really excited. And our partnership with Oregon Walks is going really strong around Vision Zero. It's going to change. We really think it's going to change the way we think about driving and the decisions that we make on the street every day.
Yeah.
And then we're faced with other things like a state department of transportation that thinks it's okay to consider removing a bike lane because it's two blocks away from another facility that's going in.
Right, right. It's like the people who say, you know, there's a bike street right over there.
Oh, yes.
You know, there's a car street like 5 miles that way.
Well, so I was talking with ODOT, and we were sitting down, and I said, they said, well, it'll be safer. We know it's safer to ride on a neighbor greenway, so we don't want you on the arterial street. So I said to them, you know it's safer to ride on a street other than Powell Boulevard, so let's close Powell Boulevard down.
Nice.
And they're like, oh, yeah, that's a good point. you're never going to do that, right? It's two different types of driving, two different needs. It's the same for bicycling. We have two different needs. People want to go slow. People want to go fast. There's those days where you have to get from point A to point B really quickly.
People who want to go home. People who want to shop.
And don't you dare use the waterfront.
Well, that's a whole other issue. It's just crazy.
The waterfront is a clusterfuck if ever one was found.
It's a good example where you have to separate modes of travel.
Sure. Well, and it's recreation
and speeds
versus
of travel, right? And so one of the things about this, I don't know if you've been following around the idea of a green loop project, sort of a circle of multi-use trail that would go from park blocks and then across two different bridges.
Oh.
And then come down 7th or 9th Avenue.
A circle of thermoplastic paint?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they want it to be like a linear park similar to the High Line in New York.
Oh, yeah. That'd be cool.
But they're not because it's not going to be elevated up.
The low line.
And yet, at the same time, you can't bike on the High Line. There's just way too many people. You cannot possibly bike. So how do you create a system where it's both green and park friendly but also moves people around and doesn't hurt people? It's really unique challenges. It's going to be really hard to do. Mm-hmm. And then how do you do that?
On some level, would those two just be so oppositional to each other?
Well, you can't unless you have to really separate it out.
Yeah.
New Orleans actually has some trails that separate it out. That's fantastic. Europe does it all the time. They just put a sign up. But then Europeans, if you put a sign up, a lot of them will follow it.
Right. Exactly. It's like, hey, there's an actual rule here.
Yeah.
We know how to queue.
Yeah. That probably works in Canada, too.
Sure. Sure. The only they apologize to the sign.
The only Canadian joke I know is how do you get 100 Canadians out of a pool?
I don't
know. Put a no swimming sign
up. You ask them to please get out of the pool.
They all get out apologizing.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. Sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Right. We love you, Glenn. Yeah.
He's either laughing really hard or like
or
throwing
cursing
his,
us out.
Yeah,
exactly. Sponsorship's done.
Some of my best friends are Canadians.
Exactly.
Really.
Right. No, it's okay because I know a Canadian. No, so.
And Canadians are brilliant. They invented the beer cooler.
That's true.
Wait, what?
Are you old enough to remember wine coolers?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so after wine coolers, Canadians created the beer cooler. So it was a combination of beer and, like, you know, fruit juice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which
different
is really
from like not a different. Mike's Hard
or a Radler. No, because it was real beer. It was okay. Like, you know, Labatt's Blue and
yeah, as opposed
and,
to
and raspberry juice.
Yeah,
it was not good.
It doesn't sound
you
good.
You can't see their reactions, but their faces are beautiful here.
I'd be interested in trying that, but most times I've had it, it doesn't work.
Well, you know, if you're the Radler, which is or a Shandy, both
right.
of them, you know, beer and lemonade.
Coming basically. From the words rad. To be like, you know, very cool and lure.
No.
To be like, no.
Radler means bicyclist in German.
Oh.
So it's the drink
that's
you drink
better.
When you're done biking, right? You're
nice.
Light enough, not give you a really big buzz, but refreshing. And in Germany, it wouldn't be like lemonade. It would be more like a Sprite kind of thing. So
sure.
It wouldn't be as sweet, but you'd okay. still be refreshing. And yeah, so it's kind of like that, but it's too sweet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Canada, for bringing us the beer cooler.
Seriously.
And what I saw Ted's talk today about flags.
Flags.
And
oh,
how
was it
beautiful
the
Canadian flag is, but also
oh,
really was about municipal flags.
Yeah.
There is a great article on the Human Transit blog, which is actually written by a guy from Portland, about who's redesigning their flag.
A Milwaukee?
No. Foreign country. New Zealand
is
redesigning
yes.
their flag. And he mentions Canada as a great example. And
so this is, you know, there's like five standards for good flags, simple,
yeah.
two or three colors, no writing.
This was the vexillologist?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, well, Roman Mars from...
Yeah. From
producer on Snap Judgment and 95% invisible, his less known show.
95.
Yes.
Slightly more visible than the other one.
5% less visible.
It was good. And just like it gave Portland a heads up. Like,
yeah.
You know, Chicago is the number one flag. It's a beautiful flag. And how pervasive in Portland and Chicago the city flag is.
Right. Because people like to see it.
And you feel proud, mm-hmm. right? You really feel proud at that recognizable flag. And then he showed some flags that were just crap, like San Francisco and Milwaukee. Milwaukee was like the worst flag
oh, really?
In America.
Uh-huh.
And what happened was...
Comic Sans?
They, no, it's even funnier than that. What they did was they invited people to submit, designs.
Yeah.
And they took the best of different designs and put it all in one hodgepodge mix.
Oh.
And then on the bottom, it's got Milwaukee. It broke the rule of never putting your own name on a flag.
Sure.
And it had multiple colors. And
I'm
it's like you like
you got to check it out. It's really
you like beer and raspberries. You like hot dogs with ketchup and with tomatoes and peppers and yeah.
Peanut butter pizza?
No, not Milwaukee flag football.
And Milwaukee
you,
the
Google.
Two E's.
Oh, yes.
Not Milwaukee.
There
Oregon.
It is. There it is. That blue one on the bottom left
there
with
it
the, like, it looks like a Ferris wheel.
Oh,
with
gosh.
A thing of wheat on it. And this was considered the, well, maybe not the worst. There was one that was the worst that
it's
actually was trademarked.
Bad.
It's pretty bad, though. It's got a lot of iconography.
And
what we pointed out was if you notice that in the left thing of the wheel, there's actually a flag on the flag.
Oh, my.
Nice.
I don't have my inception.
So I've had this.
Was that
I'll bring,
like
I always like
old,
to bring things around.
Their
right?
old flag, and they're like trying to pay homage to it or something?
I don't know. I think it was done. I had this idea of creating iconography around neighbor greenways.
Yeah.
And so we've got these neighbor greenways that go through neighborhoods, uh-huh. that use experience and real identity. What if we created like a logo or maybe a flag for each of those neighbor greenways?
There we go. So something iconic from that greenway. Or
and then instead of having like one single sign, you potentially could have that flag flying on the posts.
Sure.
Nice. Yeah.
And then to go with that, I'd like to have a neighborhood greenway cocktail for each one.
Ooh, so you think
of like Ankeny. You can have the Captain Ankeny cocktail.
Sure.
Right? Maybe with
what does he drink? Rum?
Sea moss and rum. Right?
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Sea moss. Like
right.
And then think of the other ones that you would get, other neighborhood greenways
going.
Yeah, what
would be the Clinton Greenway?
The Clinton Greenway would have, this is actually simple, it would be really fine scotch with a cigar on top. And then
like it's great, but it'll kill you.
Yeah. And then the neighborhood greenway of East Portland would just be the unimproved cocktail. And it could be like gravel in a cup.
Yeah. I was thinking like crushed ice. There you go. Yeah.
I was going to tell me if this is
or
terrible.
In a paper bag, right?
I was going to say an AMF. Adios, motherfucker. It's like the one, it's the graveyard drink that you order at a bar when you're like done drinking.
Is that like
but you want to end up drunk?
Is that like a bar rag cocktail?
I think so, yeah. It's like blue.
Ugh.
Yeah.
So if anyone's out there that wants to help me create this iconography.
Oh, there we go.
If you're a designer out there, I think it's kind of like a beautiful idea, but I can't put it together. And then people could wear their t-shirts. Like in New York, people will identify with their station stop as part of the subway, right? You identify the subway stop. That's in Chicago, very similar. I'm Logan Square, or
right.
But you can identify with your neighbor Greenway in Portland because you would never ever identify with your stop on the on light rail, right? Because it's not really a station.
Overlook.
It doesn't
24th and Bybee.
You know, maybe the statue that's nearby or something like that. So here's an opportunity for us to really sort of grab the culture of bicycling and make it part of the sort of the fabric of Portland.
Yeah.
But I don't have the skills, the art skills to do that.
So issue the call then?
Yeah, here's the call to action.
So if you are an artist, designer, or
mixologist.
Or mixologist. Please submit your suggestions to Rob Sadowski.
Or Rob at btaoregon.org will work just fine.
Awesome. Yeah.
Well, that's the man, not the organizational leader.
Yeah, because that's not partisan.
Right.
No, and you know, 2016 is going to be exciting. We're crazy, crazy. We've got a mayoral race now.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I forgot about
that. Both of them are biking now, right?
Well, right. No, they see the value of it. And
as opposed to
gubernatorial.
Gubernatorial
race. So we're going to launch Bike Vote 2016. Really get people engaged in the process, getting them out to forums, asking questions. Do you support this? Yes or no? And judging and getting folks out to build up that accountability and make this a really, really key election.
Nice.
And we want to move the whole conversation to East Portland. Really, if you want to talk about equity and you want to talk about fairness and you want to put transportation where it needs to be out in the community that has the least amount of infrastructure. What does it look like? What is that experience like? And let people ask questions and answer questions right there. So we're going to try to create a forum with some of our great partners, put it out in East Portland, not downtown, and see what the mayoral candidates have to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like Gateway Transit Center was considered as kind of a hub, right, for kind of East Portland governments. They were going to move some offices there, as I recall, some time ago. I don't know if that's still on the books or plans at all, but there's a large number of people living in that area. That, like you're saying, they need a voice too.
Yeah, so. And you know, like many cities, things get split and changed by transportation. And the way that roads, particularly freeways, are built really define a community. And so we have some really big, we have a big freeway, 205, that splits that community right down. And you can't get across it very easily and impacts those decisions that were made years and years ago. And the reason it was out there is because they were a less vocal community. Mount Hood Freeway was going to go right through the middle of
a vocal community.
A very vocal community.
Yeah.
I mean, originally there was a proposal to put it right in the middle of Laurelhurst Park.
Really?
Right. And so where does it go? It goes out to the voiceless.
Right.
And now they're talking about, you know, still trying to enliven the West Side Freeway bypass, which is just a horrible idea.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And we talked to that lady like 2-3 years ago now.
Mickey Blizzard.
Yeah.
Mickey, right. Mickey was one of the big fighters.
The freeway killer. Stopped it back in the day, yeah.
And we may need another Mickey Blizzard on the West Side. That this continuing thought that freeways are the answer to economy.
Right.
We're gonna,
when it seems to be the opposite is true.
No, it just creates more sprawl, more crazy traffic, and it splits communities further.
You know what the answer to economy is? Go buy some shit. That's kind of, that's the,
and buy it locally.
Yeah, yeah. Walk to your store that's nearby your place, and yeah.
And get to know the people who work there and learn about them and mm-hmm. what those experiences are. And
yeah.
That's why there, you know, that's why there's biking in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's those types of communities that you can get in and around. It's not a symptom of everything that's wrong. It's a symptom of everything that's right.
I like that. I can get behind that. Yeah.
Whew, that was deep.
That was. Well, thank you so much for coming in here and talking to us.
My pleasure.
Can you hang out with us for the news in the mail?
Yeah, I'd love to hear
Excellent.
It.
Aaron, you ready?
Hit it.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
All right, first up from bikeportland.org. Police are investigating a car in North Portland hit and run. According to Portland police, a call came in at 6:26 p.m. September 11th. September 10th. And officers and medical personnel arrived on the scene shortly thereafter, found 24-year-old woman who was on the ground with several injuries, including lacerations to her face. The woman told them that she was hit and that the person driving the car did not stop. If you have any information about this incident, please email crimetips@portlandoregon.gov.
Yikes.
Yeah, there's a lot more to the story, but we'll just link to the whole thing there.
I promise you that an uninsured motorist has something to do with that.
Well, yeah, why?
I mean, a lot of hit and runs are they're either intoxicated of some sort, or they're not insured.
There's the fear of prosecution.
Yeah. And this anti-immigrant movement that is preventing us from having allowing people who are without the documents to have
licenses.
It's just such a horrible thing for bicyclists and pedestrians
because
it prevents them from having insurance. And if you're hit, it's not just bad for, you know, this person can't recover any of those damages.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe their own insurance might help.
Right. But, hopefully she's insured, but some of our bicyclists don't have own cars, don't own homes and don't have that insurance.
Yeah. I, for one, like I've got health insurance might have some help, but
the podcast is providing health insurance. You guys are really covering something.
That's
now.
Right. Yeah. I'm paying for all of Aaron's medical expenses.
$5 at a time.
Right. No, I don't actually have my own insurance for my bike either.
Right.
So I should probably get on
I'm
that.
Wondering. Like,
I do have renter's insurance, but
you have renter's insurance.
Yeah.
And you don't have car insurance because you own a
don't
car.
Don't have a car. Yeah. I heard the other way to get
Does
around that.
Does the renter's
that.
Insurance have liability insurance?
That's a good question.
So
I should
you
look
might
into
be
that.
Covered,
I think it only covers like what's in your apartment.
It'll cover that bike.
Yeah.
But the question is whether it covers any liability. So if you have homeowner's insurance, I own a home. I have homeowner's insurance. If I hit someone with a bike, it'll cover that liability.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
As opposed to...
And if you had a own a car, it'll cover that liability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you could also buy like a junker, I've heard, like, you know, some $200 like Honda hatchback or something with like moss all over it. You just buy that and put it in your driveway if you have a driveway, and then you insure the car.
And
you
then
never have
covered.
To drive the car. But yeah, then you can
buy a cheap ass house too.
Exactly. That's true. Whichever is easier.
One
for
in
you.
Clackamama.
Right, yeah. I'm just gonna buy some properties. So like, so you know, like a square foot of land out like on the Clackamas River somewhere.
Sounds fun, actually.
Then,
more your boat.
Exactly.
Your homeowner's insurance on
I'll
your
live on a
there.
Canoe.
All right. Next up from the Washington Post via our friend Tim Mooney.
Thanks, Tim.
America's once magical, now mundane love affair with cars cruising toward oblivion. For nearly all of the first century of automobile travel, getting your license meant liberation from parental control. a passport to the open road. Today, only half of millennials bother to get their driver's licenses by age 18. Car culture, the 20th century engine of the American dream, is an old guy's game. Much of the emotional meaning of the car, especially to young adults, has transferred to the smartphone.
Yeah, yeah.
says Mark Lizuski, executive director of the Antique Automobile Club of America Museum in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Quote, instead of Ford versus Chevy, it's Apple versus Android. And instead of customizing their ride, they customize their phones with covers and apps.
But it's always been about, like, meeting people, right? Like, a dude would get a car, and then he'd go out and drive and cruise in the streets and be like, hey, ladies, check out my car.
Right.
And now
other guys would also be like, what kind of engine do you got in there?
Right, right.
You can only have that kind of teenager if you've got decent transit and you've got decent bicycle facilities.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, because the smartphone helps them find their way around with either of those options.
Well, right, but you also, you know, you can get places. My youngest son doesn't need to drive at all. He's 18. He doesn't even have the time to get a license, let alone seem to want to.
Right.
My oldest son lives in Detroit. It's really, really hard not to have a car in Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Even with Shinola bicycles?
Especially
not made in Detroit yet.
Oh, they're not. Okay, never mind.
So they're owned by a company that has their headquarters in Detroit.
But not made in Detroit.
But they're currently not made in Detroit. I think they're made in Wisconsin.
Oh, really?
By the same people that did Waterford.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But I think the plan is to open up a factory in Detroit at some point.
That is
gotcha.
The hope.
If they can get people there. But people will probably have to drive to the factory.
So the thing I was going to say is that you can swerve left or right in a car and attract the ladies or whoever you're trying to attract. Or you can swipe left and right on your smartphone. So now you don't need the car to attract the people you're attracted to anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This was an interesting article. It's huge. And so I just put like the little bits from it. But the interesting part of this article was it's all this – it's written in this sort of like kids these days kind of voice.
They're so wacky.
They use this Snapchat thing.
Yeah. Oh, it's so sad that they're not gonna drive anymore. Oh.
Yeah, that is a bummer.
You know, yeah. But I welcome the day when the car is seen as more of the oddity.
I for one welcome our new robot overlords.
And that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lastly, also from bikeportland.org, Bike Portland is 10 years old, so let's have a party. Bike Portland's 10th birthday party is October 2nd at 6 p.m. at Velocult Bike Shop and Tavern. And families are encouraged.
Yeah.
It's an all-ages party.
And there's going to be cake.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I'm going.
Yeah. And and they're 10, so.
Yay.
So you should go.
It's the day before my mom arrives.
Oh, yeah. You should definitely go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get all the fun out before.
Because once your mom's here.
Imagine what Bike Portland's going to be like when they're a teenager.
Yes, I know. Yeah. When they try and drive. And yeah. And they're like, this is too hard. I just want a smartphone.
Oh, do I have to blog today? Yeah, I mean, blogging yesterday.
Except then they'll get Snapchat.
Yeah. They'll Snapchat everything. Forget that. There won't be any writing. It'll just be like.
Pictures.
Of their privates.
A bunch of hashtags.
Yeah.
Hashtag bikes, hashtag Portland.
Yeah. Hashtag street life.
They're not called hashtags in Snapchat. I have a 14-year-old stepdaughter.
What are they called?
She's teaching me all these things. They're filters.
Oh, look at me.
Oh.
And you can't just create your own. You have to get Snapchat to like adopt them.
To approve one?
Yeah.
Well, that takes all the fun out of it.
Yeah. So like Cleveland High School has their own filter.
What about the really long ones that, like, no one else uses? Those are my favorite.
Like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm not using Snapchat.com.com.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the one I would make. Yeah. They never approved that.
You know.
I guess, okay, so that's that. That's
I don't
scary.
Know. It's a whole new thing that I just don't want to pick up because, like, I still occasionally write letters. And, you know, my mother is like.
Like physical letters?
Yeah. My mother, if I send her a card or a letter, it just makes her day. She's 92.
How the hell do you do that?
A cursive.
Wow.
Which they're not even teaching in some schools anymore.
You write in people still write in cursive?
That should be telling me you know your multiplication tables by heart.
I know some of them. Pretty good at math.
One times one is one.
That's good stuff, man.
Seriously, no, it totally is. I'm joshing.
But it's
with
just
you,
the sense of like where we are with, you know, permanence versus impermanence, and people who like have saved letters, and when their spouses are no longer with them, they can go back and look at those thoughts and feelings. Pictures are one thing. Pictures really are neat, but they don't show you anything inside the person.
Sure. Yeah.
And so where are those words that we weren't going to have because this moment of technology just disappears after it's sent?
Right. And words kind of have the, like there's a certain imagination that goes along with words because it's not a picture. And so you kind of make pictures in your head based off of what you're reading.
Yeah.
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 As opposed to, here's
it's
a
erotica over porn, right?
Here's a one-time dick pic. Yeah. So.
Instead,
we said that
take...
very differently, didn't we?
Instead, I will take a paragraph to describe. Let's just.
How shall I
here.
Describe this? Let me count the ways.
We got mail.
Oh. It was too soft and now it's too loud.
Oh. That's right.
Are we just listening to you read your email right now?
Pretty much. From Ed in Phoenix. Drew, here is your hashtag. Hashtag news not brews. Ed in Phoenix. And we haven't figured out what Drew he's talking
right,
about,
there's
right?
There's Drew the welder, which is the first Drew that comes to mind.
Right.
Who would be interested in, was it brews, not?
News not brews.
News not brews. Because that's what we talked with,
was it with
Mariana last week
okay.
about me not drinking but also reading the news weeklies.
Maybe like Drew is just his name for like any person.
It's like, hey, bro.
Yeah.
Hey, Drew.
What up, Drew?
Could be. Could be.
I'm taking that, Ed. I'm gonna go with it.
That's good. What's up, Drew?
I know two Drews that are short for Drusella.
Really?
Hmm?
That's D-R-U.
D-R-U-C-E-L-L-A.
Right on.
Oh, with a C.
Or maybe it's an S. I don't know.
Either one.
Yeah.
It's not common.
No, it's very Southern.
Yeah. I could go for that.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll call my bros Druce.
Druce.
What's up, Druce?
Don't bring me down. I knew. I just had to beat you to it. It was all Druce. I knew you were going to go there. Next up from Josh in Portland. I know teas are always an option for non-alcoholic drinks, but you can actually order at most bars. Oh, but this is one you can actually order at most bars. Just get a soda water with a couple of lime wedges and a maraschino cherry or two. You'll get a few side eyes and have to squeeze the lime juice and muddle the cherry.
Like a commoner.
But
so, were you talking
it's a pretty
about
non-existent calorie count.
The peer pressure of not drinking? Was that part of what you were talking about?
Or what to order at bars?
Yeah, largely. Like, I'm just trying to find new things to drink that aren't like, you know, like sugary. Yeah, because all the like mixed drinks are oftentimes a sugary drink.
Right.
And I prefer kind of the, like, that's why I'm having this ginger beer right now, which we got from the beer mongers. Thank you. But it's just kind of like the more of a spicy or savory taste or something.
Yeah, I've been getting into making my own shrubs lately.
Oh, yeah. Like with vinegar?
Cider vinegar, fruit, and sugar, or some kind of sugar. Yeah. I got a fig cinnamon shrub in my refrigerator right now, and a raspberry shrub in my refrigerator.
Interesting.
It's kind of like the vinegar syrups that the Pop candy guy is doing now.
Okay. Yeah, and this is
you can mix it with water, you can mix it with seltzer, you can mix it with other hard beverages and have a drink. And
it's non-alcoholic if you want it that way, right?
Yeah, if you want it that way. It's just like your own soda. You can add as much sweet as you want.
Nice.
And they're really easy to make.
Right.
I should have brought some. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Actually, Adele made one like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Really?
It's kind of a shrub. Yeah.
I was excited to see that you tried pickle juice.
Oh, yeah.
Well, did you get a pickle back?
I mean, I had a jar of pickles and I ate them all and then I had juice. Does that count?
No, because you need the beer or the shot of bourbon and then the pickle back. Yeah.
Since I'm not drinking, there's no way to get the pickle back, so I just had the pickle.
A shot of ginger beer.
I had a pickle forward.
With a pickle back.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there are more electrolytes in pickle juice.
I know. Yeah, it was great.
I think it's delicious myself. I used to drink it as a kid.
Oh,
actually.
Yeah.
As long as it's vinegar-based and not salt-based. If it's like the brine pickle, mm-hmm.
Could be. Could
no,
be.
I don't think so.
Well, you know, either way, it's it disgusted many people that were following my, my pursuit of
I was excited. I'm waiting for the day you get so desperate you start drinking the tuna can drippings.
Oh, I've done that.
Oil-based.
Totally done just, that.
Just squeeze it out, take a shot.
Oh, man, that's what I would do when I got, like, the canned oysters and stuff. Like, it's just, there's nothing better than a little bit of oil that's been marinated in seafood.
There you
go. Or vice versa.
You know, it's your omega-3s
yeah.
plus other fats
yeah, totally.
And oils.
Did you also call people and ask them if they had King Oscar in a can? Is that-
I'm not coming in unless you got it. Right.
What about?
Next up from Tim Mooney. House Dems seek to protect bike funding and highway bill. And he sends us a link from The Hill, and I was going to feature it on news, but I already featured one piece of news he sent to us.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Don't get greedy, Tim.
And they didn't get a deal done by Friday, so it's really very worrisome.
Yeah, he says, I try not to get political, but for some oddball reason, bikes, pedestrians, and trains are somehow partisan, and I can never really figure out why.
Get to the chopper! What the hell?
Just seemed like the right time to put that in.
Right. It doesn't make sense, but it's... Again, it's back to that symptom stuff we were talking about earlier. It's Republicans see it as a symptom of what's wrong with America instead of realizing that it's about small economy and local growth, and it's really what they believe in. And they don't see it the same way.
It's weird.
But there's also combine it with Koch brothers that are funding anti-transit and anti-bike mechanisms because they want their coal plants and their gas plants to get more money. It's not so secret. And it's not so accidental. Follow the money.
Yeah, if we could get those people to, like, I don't know, if we could only, like, swap all their assets for something that was a little more friendly to everybody. There's not really a way to do that in the night. No shell game or anything.
No. Not yet.
Yeah, shell.
Hey.
No shell game whatsoever. Next up from Evan in Colorado. Hey, Brock and Aaron, just wanted to send a comment about costume parties.
Okay.
From last week's episode. I lived at a house for almost 6 years now, and we've had many, many parties over that time, all with costume themes. Of course, people don't have to dress up, but are always encouraged to. We, of course, would never paddle anyone, but instead we have 3 good-sized boxes full of costumes that are left by the front door for people to use. It never fails that after a couple beverages, even the most reserved guests will end up in at least a snowman's vest or a crazy wig.
Yeah, we talked about costume parties last week with Mariana. And then also how she got, like, punished, basically, physically punished corporally.
She was paddled.
Yeah, yeah. For not wearing a costume.
At a frat or a sorority?
I wonder. I don't know if we determined where it was.
It was a pirate-themed party of some kind.
Yeah.
I have a friend who went to a wedding where it was really boring. Nobody was dancing. And all of a sudden, the wedding party brought out a box of what they said were Chilean hats. Big, beautiful, maybe with Colombian, colorful hats.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the party was something. And people put on the hats and they were dancing and having fun.
Huh.
You know, you put on a hat, it kind of changes you just a little bit.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. So everybody, get yourself a hat.
A colorful, colorful Colombian hat.
Exactly. Well, thanks, Evan. That's a good, good story. I'm glad it worked out well for you.
All right. Comments from previous episodes from episode 254 on SysFail. Tim Mooney says, old-timey comments for the win. Just saying.
Thanks.
From episode 255 with Mariana Moe, Johnny K in Florida says, not so sure, but I think you guys missed the idea of Labor Day. So to clue you in, you shouldn't be working.
Sorry. It was opposite day.
And he suggests that I turn my old shoes into birdhouses and sends us a Instructables link for that.
Nice.
Which is, I think that's a really cool idea. I'm going to like start pirating like
Does it
birdhouses.
Work
and
for low heel? I mean low
Yeah,
bags?
Low top shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you hang it. Per the instructable
shoe off.
Here, you hang it like this, and the birds like come in and like you know
and live there.
Them. Yeah,
yeah.
Why could you do that one more time?
just go right in.
There we go.
Oh my god!
Obviously not crows, which in some cases the only birds I see in Portland are crows and scrub jays and
right.
Especially most
look, there are crows that like hang up on the top of our office, and we have the top office. And the other day we saw a crow holding a bolt in its beak, and we swore they were trying to get in.
They're like,
We're coming in for you.
Using tools.
Yeah. Wait, what's the next step after that? They're logging into our system and hacking in.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and after that, people with cars, the crows are getting in there too.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
They're Watch gonna, out, Google. The crows
the
are coming after
those.
You.
Out of the way.
Next up, tweets.
All your streets are belong to us.
Tweets. One from Andre Johnson informing us that he rode the Gap and CNO from Pittsburgh to D.C.
Oh, yeah.
PBG is a good place to bike and has a dedicated community.
Rob gave the thumbs up to that.
Yeah. Really? Oh, you spent some time in Pittsburgh recently,
I mean,
right?
Just there are these communities where you can get from place to place that we're really far behind. Minneapolis, what they're doing in trail development is great.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm so excited by the Salmon Berry Trail, if we can see this through, where we'd have a multi-use trail from Tillamook all the way to Hillsboro, and
that is
what
really
that would
good.
Mean, 150 yeah. miles of uninterrupted travel by bike.
Separated from the rest of traffic. Yeah.
Just
yeah.
like the CNO.
Right, or the Katy mm-hmm. Trail in Missouri. Or
Yeah, I'm in. Let's do it.
From Gerald Fittipaldi, I heard through the grapevine that Lentz is in need of a new neighborhood association members. Could impact PDX bikes? And I don't know if that's true or not, but I imagine that might impact the Foster.
Any of these projects, if you're interested, show up in a neighborhood association, get involved, get elected, you can change your neighborhood.
This is the most calls
right.
to actions we've had in an episode before.
Do the things you care about, people. Do the things you care about. Yeah.
I don't live in Lentz, so
and
I couldn't
if you need help,
part of the
we'll train you.
Oh,
we've
yes.
got staff that can train you.
That's right. This is Rob speaking as the spokesman for the PTA.
PTA
the Bicycle Transportation Alliance here in Portland, Oregon.
PTAs, too, have some really interesting impact on,
yeah.
on things.
Yeah.
Small D democracy. It's much more fun than big D democracy.
Oh, seriously.
Lastly, from Mike, been enjoying hearing the interviews with homies. Ride by the studio on the way home or on the way to Paz every day. Nice to hear the community represented on a podcast. Also, your Ghost Robot cartoon that you were mentioning, you all definitely meant the cybernetic ghost of Christmas past
that
from the
correct.
Future. Which, are you familiar with that is?
No.
Oh, it's hilarious. You'll just have to watch it later.
Is it a cartoon reference?
It's a cartoon reference,
okay,
yeah.
Excellent.
It wasn't actually what I was talking about the last episode when I was talking about the ghost robot.
But it's what he's talking about.
But
right
it
now.
Is a ghost robot. And
nice.
It was a good reference.
I'm so excited. I know what I'm doing tonight. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's close this show out. It's been a good day. It's been a good hour.
It's been a good hour and almost 20 minutes.
All right. Well, it's time to go.
Yeah. Well, we'll cut most of this out anyway.
That's right. We'll remove it in post.
Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text to 503-847-9774.
Twitter at Sprocket Podcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Hurt Bird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Johnny K. Shadowfoot,
Katrina Melengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan George, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lean, Richard Wazinski, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubisch, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Wise, Doug Cohen Miller,
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister Morgan, Chris Gonzalez,
Dan Gibbar, Zoe Campagna, John Blood,
Allison Wiley, Andy Brunner, Dave Nose,
Lars V, Chris Smith, Christy Kaster,
Caleb Jenkinson, JP Cooley, Peanut Butter Jarmat,
Patrick Archain, Gabriel Trainer, Sebastian Poole,
Marco Lowe, Rich Otterstrom, Andrew Alderson,
Drew the Welder, Anna Christus Gukas,
John Wasserman, Andre Johnson, Chillian Troy,
the King of Division, John Sisson, and Richard G.
Okay, brush your teeth.
Go to bed.